You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 22nd of February, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Got a couple of news stories to get into today. They're both actually from Britain. One of them is good news, which we will finish up with if we get enough time for it. And the first story concerns these attacks on our history and the attacks on our monuments. A history commission set up by Bristol's mayor after the toppling of the Edward Colston statue has urged ministers to stay out of debates on the future of dozens of city streets named after slave traders. And Bristol's mayor is black. The toppling of the Edward Colston statue was illegal. It was mob vandalism. They had had votes before on whether the city should get rid of the Edward Colston statue, and every time they had a referendum on it, the Bristolians said they would like to keep the statue. So that was done in defiance of democracy, and of course it was praised by the BBC, praised by Labour, praised by Bristol's black mayor, and Bristol as a city would not even be there if it wasn't for Edward Colston. Now, we've gone into the details of Edward Colston quite a bit, so I won't bore you with that again. Just to say that he was not a slave trader. He made his money from trading other things, and once he had made his money, he went to work for a company that did also trade in human resources, which is all that slaves were, basically. They were just human resources. They are attacking Edward Colston because they just want to attack anything that is white, basically. And they start with attacking things to do with the British Empire, and they will go on from that to just attacking anything white. As we see now with these commissions, particularly the one that Sadiq Khan has set up, which wants to change the names of city streets because the streets are named after great philanthropists or people involved in the British Empire. 200 years ago, everything was involved with the British Empire, and part of the British Empire was trade in human resources that were purchased from black African chiefs. Professor Tim Cole, the Commission's chair, said a new audit by Bristol City Council had identified a handful of streets named after Colston, whose company enslaved at least 80,000 Africans. Well, let's just stop right there. His company didn't enslave 80,000 Africans. 80,000 Africans were sold by African chiefs. It was Africans enslaving Africans. White people were not going to Africa and hunting down black Africans to enslave them. It was their own people that were doing that. Dozens more streets have also been named after other slave traders. It should be up to people who live on those streets to decide. It is an uber local issue, Professor Cole said. If a bunch of people who live on Colston Avenue want to change the name of their street, they should be empowered to do so. And he does have an argument there that people where people live, they are the ones responsible for keeping it tidy, and they should have a say in what happens in their immediate area. But where you are talking about heritage, that is something that is owned by the whole country. That is something that is owned by the descendants of the people that built those streets. You're talking about British heritage there. That is not an uber local issue. And if we're going to start criticising these people from 200 years ago, we can only criticise them from what was said about them at the time. And what was said about them at the time was that these people are such great people that we want to name a street after them, or we want to make a statue of them. If people today, 200 years later, say, oh, well, these were bad people, that has no relevance whatsoever, because you have to go on the primary source evidence, not what somebody says 200 years later. If everybody was saying these are really great people 200 years ago when the streets were named and the statues were put up, then they have to stay there, and we have to accept that they were good people by the standards of the time. We cannot apply today's standards to different points in history so that we can then condemn the people of the past. And this is clearly just being done so that white people can be condemned. And the government, the Conservative government, have spoken up about this and have said this should not be going on. They want to put a stop to this vandalism of British history. And Bristol's mayor, is the same as London's mayor. Now that Bristol is getting more and more non-whites, it may even be majority non-white now, they start to want to tear down all the representations of white people, all the white history, and replace it with images of themselves, the same as Sadiq Khan wishes to do in London. The community secretary, Robert Jenrick, has warned that town hall militants and woke worthies have street names in their sights. While Jenrick's proposed new retain and explain planning policy will apply only to plaques and monuments, there are growing concerns that ministers' inflammatory rhetoric will make it harder for locals on opposing sides to have conciliatory discussions about the future of street names. And I hadn't said, but this article is taken from The Guardian, so of course it's an extreme left-wing viewpoint here, and they want to see these street names changed, possibly to ridiculous names like Diversity Street, like they did in Manchester recently. These kinds of divisive phrases add to this sense of a culture war, said Cole, who is based at Bristol University. We need a more thoughtful way to explore the past and think about the public realm. It is stoking fires that don't need stoking. Well, who was the one that started stoking this fire? Who was the one that started pulling down monuments, vandalising monuments, demanding that names are changed of universities and hospitals? Who is it that started all of this? It was the extreme left. They are the ones who are being divisive. Diversity in itself is divisive. It's even in the name, isn't it? Diversity. It means divided. After the Colston statue was brought down by Black Lives Matter protesters in June, the head of an enslaved African man was smashed in Bristol, and a statue of a black playwright was also attacked in the city. So what they're trying to do there is that they're trying to say that it was the white people that did this. It was the far right that did this. They have no evidence that it was the far right that did this. The supposed headstone of an enslaved African man could have been just damaged by yobs. And the statue of a black playwright that was attacked in the city, apparently that had bleach thrown on it. Well, throwing corrosive substances is not something associated with white people, is it? Throwing acid and corrosive substances is something that is associated with the newcomers. It's a particularly vicious crime that never existed in this country until the immigrants brought it here, particularly from places like India and Pakistan. So it could well be that somebody was throwing acid at somebody else and it happened to hit this statue. We also have an extreme left-wing professor that actually gave out a guide of how to destroy statues and monuments with corrosive liquids. And she was a representative of a museum, and she was also a representative of a university. And I don't believe she has been sacked for this. She's not even British either. She's American. Some commissioners fear Jenrick's proposed laws will prevent the city from deciding the fate of other local monuments. Well, yes, I hope these laws do prevent these majority non-white cities from destroying all the monuments that are there to the great people of our British past. They should not be entitled to start destroying things and destroying our history. We've been generous enough to them to allow them to live in our homeland, and this is the way they repay us, by destroying it. Not just with all the litter and the rubbish and the crime, but literally destroying all the memorials to the great people of our past, the great philanthropists, and particularly people like Edward Colston, who pretty much built Bristol. He was such a good man, an incredible philanthropist, setting up schools, hospitals, endowments, so that the good things that he did would continue long after he had died. I mean, he still has these endowments that are set up, same as Cecil Rhodes, set up his Cecil Rhodes Scholarship, which lots of black students take advantage of. And then when they get to Oxford and Cambridge, they start talking about pulling down Cecil Rhodes' statue. And it's incredibly ungrateful these people are for the things that we have done for them. History professor Madge Dresser accused the government of a power grab. It is a bid to control history and to bring these vital local decisions under the over-centralised and partisan grip of the Tory party, she said. Its tone is hectoring and needlessly divisive. It seems supported by those elements in the party whose grasp of history is at best traditionalist and at worst stone-cold ignorant. She's saying that Jacob Rees-Mogg is stone-cold ignorant on history. I would say he's probably one of the most well-versed out of all the politicians in history. And they need to control history. They need to stop this revisioning of history, which is going on, which is not based on new evidence coming to light, from the time. It's just based on people changing their opinions today. I mean, if new evidence comes to light in such a way that it has done after World War II, then you can say, well, look, we have evidence from the time. This is primary source material that says something different may have happened. Now, that is legitimate. That is not what they're saying here when they are attacking these statues. They are not saying, we've had new evidence that has come to light that the people in Bristol really hated Edward Colston, and he was really a child molester, and he was also a thief, and we have all this evidence from then. That's not the case. What we have is people lying, like they did here, claiming that Edward Colston enslaved 80,000 people when he did nothing of the sort. The company that he was the head of traded goods in exchange for human resources, which the African chiefs sold to them. Very, very different from actually going out and enslaving people. What they're trying to do is they're trying to cover up the African part in the slave trade. And without the African part in the slave trade, there never would have been a slave trade. They may have been with the Arabs. The Arabs kidnapped blacks, but the Arabs also kidnapped whites. White people did nothing of the sort. We just bought these people and we brought them to Africa and we gave them a much better life than they would have had if they had stayed in Africa and been bought by African chiefs. In actual fact, being bought by a white slave trader would have been the best possible thing that could have actually happened to those black slaves, because if they hadn't been bought by the white slave trader, they would have been bought by Arab slave traders who castrated the male slaves, or they would have been bought by black slave traders who sacrificed and ate the black slaves. What is better, being sacrificed and eaten, or being castrated, or being taken to America, given a house, given food, given medical care, given education, given a pension, had your children looked after, had women brought over for you so that you could mate, so that you could have conjugal relations? I mean, it's just incredible the way that we are told that the white people were the bad guys in the slave trade. We were the good guys in that, and we were the ones that did away with it. The only people in the entire history of the world to actually do away with the slave trade and spend millions on enforcing that. We had to have the entire Navy dedicated to preventing this. And the people that were worst, the ones that really didn't want to give it up, were the black Africans. It was still legal in Mauritania about 20 years ago. For throughout the whole of the 20th century, slavery was legal in parts of Africa where they refused to actually give it up. It was white people that were enforcing that, particularly the British, the very people that are we are now being told were the main slavers. And the history that we're now being taught is the exact opposite of what actually went on. Jenrick's proposals could backfire, say other commissioners. Nigel Costley, TUC Southwest Regional Secretary, said blocking change could lead to people taking matters into their own hands. Cities have always changed, and people will find ways of changing things for themselves if you don't allow local democratic processes to work, he said. I mean, this is just so hypocritical. What he's saying here, he's actually making threats. He's saying if the government prevent us from doing this, people are going to destroy these statues themselves and they're going to change the street names themselves. And then he has the cheek to say people will find ways of changing things for themselves if you don't allow local democratic processes to work. Well, the democratic process says that people don't want to change these things. And because the democratic process says we don't want to change this, then the thugs go out and do it themselves. And the evidence for that is with the Edward Colston statue. They had referendums. The referendum said we want to keep the statue. And the mob of thugs went out and tore the statue down. So this here, pointing to local democratic processes, this is just a lie. What they mean is when they set up a commission made up of left-wing activists and ethnic minorities, when they have a vote on whether they want to change things, they unanimously vote to change it. But they're not the people who should have any responsibility over this. It's our heritage. It's the British people's heritage. It's our ancestors that they are attacking here. They're not attacking their ancestors. If they want to attack their black ancestors, then they're welcome to. But they don't. And it was their black ancestors that sold them, not the whites. The commission will also be making recommendations to highlight the struggles of workers and other marginalized groups in the city. We have to recognize that the formal statues in the city completely fail to represent Bristol. There's only one woman, and that's Queen Victoria. There's been barely any recognition of black people and the working class. It's been wealthy white men who have been put on pedestals, and that needs to change, said Costley. Well, what have women ever done for Bristol? What can they name one woman who has ever done anything for Bristol? Any one female philanthropist that has done anything like what Edward Colston did? They say, well, there's no recognition of black people. Well, there weren't any black people. There was not a statistically relevant number of black people in Bristol until after the war. There may have been some living on the docks that were working on the ships, but not enough to actually make up even a percentage. That's the reason why there are no statues of them, and because they never did anything for Bristol, did they? And they say here it's always been wealthy white men. Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? It means that instead of being rich and greedy and keeping all their wealth to themselves, they've actually donated it to the city. And they've tried to improve the lot of their own people. They've shown that they are worthy of having that wealth because they have shared it among the people that didn't have so much wealth. And they make this out to be a bad thing. Oh, it's a terrible thing. It's wealthy white men that are on these pedestals. Well, they're not just there because they're wealthy, are they? They are put there because they've done great things for the Bristolians. While the commission is yet to make any recommendations on the future of the empty plinth where Colston once stood, there are fears the far right might attack any monuments erected to mark the city's involvement in the slave trade. I mean, that is just incredible, isn't it? After all the statues that we saw the extreme left pulling down over the last few years, it began in America, pulling down the great heroes of the Confederacy. And then it moved to Britain, pulling down Colston, attacking Winston Churchill. And they say their fears are the far right might attack the monuments. The monument smashers are the far left. And outside of that, the monument smashers are ISIS. That's what ISIS were doing in Syria, tearing down any remembrance of the people that were in Syria before the Arabs. I mean, it's exactly the same thing that's going on here with Black Lives Matter and these extreme leftists. that ISIS were doing in Syria. They were tearing down images that were put there by the Romans and by the Greeks, because they're not Arabs, because they're not Muslim. They wanted to take the area over, and when you take an area over and you are the victor, then you get rid of all the memories of the vanquished. That's what a conquering warmonger does when he takes over. Just by coincidence, it also happens to be what people like Sadiq Khan does when he takes over London as mayor, and what this Bristolian black mayor is now doing. It's strange, isn't it? They've been put in place by democracy, and yet they do the same thing as if they were a conquering victor in a war. Dresser said she would like a counter-memorial placed near the empty Colston plinth. Personally, I would like to have a monument to the contribution enslaved Africans and their descendants have made to the prosperity of the city. But I worry that this might be vandalised and attract the attentions of the far right. Well, considering the fact Britain never had any enslaved Africans, I don't see how they can have made any contribution to the city. Enslaved Africans worked on farms in America. Enslaved Africans' contribution was picking fruit and picking cotton, and they were paid for that contribution with a roof over their head, with food, with medicine, and all the rest that we've talked about so many times here. It's not like they were being forced to work and were being starved, is it? They were under the same conditions that everybody else was under. You have to work to provide something, to put food on your plate, unless you are unable to work. And these slaves, when they were unable to work, when they reached a certain age or when they were ill, they were looked after. They had the equivalent of a welfare state that was provided by the slave owner. Nobody else had that. The poor whites, when they didn't have work, they weren't looked after by a wealthy father figure that had actually paid a lot of money for them. We just had the workhouse, and we were left there on the streets starving, and we would very often be kidnapped and sent to America as indentured servants. But you don't see us whining about reparations for that. Although the commission has limited resources, it turned down funding from the influential Society of Merchant Venturers, which once counted Colston as a member, and managed institutions in the city bearing his name in order to maintain its independence. So this society is still going, and it's basically a philanthropic society. It's these merchant venturers, the merchants who were very wealthy, and they set up this society so that they could pool their wealth together and improve the lot of the British people. And the question you have to ask is, why didn't these African chiefs do the same? These African chiefs were making just as much wealth out of the slave trade as the merchant venturers were. And what did they do with all that wealth? Why didn't they use that wealth to build hospitals and schools and all the things that you see the white merchants doing? Nobody ever asked that question either. The society said it respected the commission's decision. Costley said he was glad the funding had been rejected. They've tried to reform, but they're too steeped in the past, he said. So you've got this society which is saying, okay, you're upset about this. You don't want to blame black people for this. You just want to blame white people for it. But we'll still help you out. We're nice people. We're philanthropists. We're willing to offer you money. But we don't want you to be tearing down the memory of these great people that set up this money. And this commissioner said, well, we don't want your money. They don't want the money because they're just anti-white. They just want to tear down anything that reminds them of white people. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government would not comment on the suggestion that the renaming of streets would be blocked. For hundreds of years, public statues and monuments have been erected across the country to celebrate individuals and great moments in British history, they said. Any removal should require planning permission and local people be given the chance to be properly consulted. That is why we are changing the law to protect historic monuments. And this is the point. This Guardian article will go on about democracy and the democratic process. But they don't have a democratic process. They just have these commissions, and these commissions say that this should be moved. And the public don't hear anything about it. When the public learn about it, they get together huge petitions and signed by hundreds and hundreds of people saying, we don't want this change. We want things to remain the same. We don't want to degrade the memory of our ancestors. These guys were good people. Quite clearly, our ancestors thought they were good people. That's why they named streets after them. It's incredibly offensive that we now have these activists trying to pull down our monuments. And even worse than that, the people that are tasked with preserving our history, groups like English Heritage, the National Trust, various other organizations that are there to preserve British heritage, they're now all on this bandwagon as well. They're all talking about recontextualizing things and putting plaques up saying, well, this guy wasn't really that good because Indians didn't like him, or this guy wasn't really that good because black Africans didn't like him. It really shouldn't matter what the other peoples of the world thought. What matters is, did our ancestors do their best for their people? And I think it's quite clear that they did do their best for their people on the whole. There were some things that were negative, as I say, with taking the whites, the poor whites, and sending them off as indentured servants. But even that, there was a positive motive behind it, because the government was looking at them and saying, well, they're not really doing anything here. They haven't got a chance to make anything of themselves in Britain. If we do send them to America or Australia, then they will have a chance to make something of themselves. They can get themselves some land. They can take over some land. They can build a farm. They can help build a civilization. And it may have been hard for these indentured servants for the 8 years or 16 years or however long they were indentured for. But their descendants are the ancestors of the American and Australian people that are there now. I mean, within 100 years, Australia had gone from nothing to being a first world civilization. And that was built entirely with these quote unquote prisoners from Britain. And most of the time they were seen as criminals simply because they were the poor and they had stolen something to eat, or they had just been found on the streets as a vagrant and they didn't have a job. So they were sent to Australia or they were sent to America, and eventually they were able to buy themselves free, or their indentured servitude was up, and they were able to stake out some land for themselves, get some animals, and build up a farm, build up a business. And within a few decades, they were like the equivalent of landed gentry. So even though it was a negative thing, being kidnapped and being an indentured servant, when you look at it on the whole, when you look at it 100 years later, and you look at the great civilization that was built in America and the great civilization that was built in Australia, it was a positive thing. So our ancestors did really have our best interests at heart, and particularly when you look at the wealthy philanthropists and all the great things that they did, particularly Edward Colston and the ones in London, they really did see the fact that they had lots of money and that they were wealthy as a blessing from God. And the fact that there were other people in the world that didn't, that was so that they could be charitable to them, because they wanted to be God-fearing. They wanted to be Christian men. And part of being Christian is to be charitable. So they saw the poor as necessary so that they could be charitable. They could give their money to the poor. And when you have an ethno-state and the wealthy give money to the poor, the money isn't going to disappear, is it? The money isn't going to go out from the country. It's just going to continue to be circulated. And it means that the poor are going to be able to raise themselves up. And if they have the drive and they have the intelligence, then they will be able to raise themselves up to a decent standard of living with the help from the wealthy. And eventually they themselves might be wealthy and they can then pay the poor back themselves and be charitable to the poor. And you have a cycle. When you import other races into the country whose loyalties are to other extended kinship groups, and you extend your charity to them, then the charity money doesn't circulate. The money doesn't circulate within the community. The money has been taken out of the community and it goes to another one. And we don't have anywhere near the drive to be as charitable to our fellow white men as we used to have. I mean, it was just seen as something that you had to do. I mean, these were the members of your extended kinship group, your extended family. You should look after them. If you see the poor, you should be wanting to do your best for them. That was what this noblesse oblige was. It meant that the nobles were obliged to look after the less lucky members of society. And instead of that, now we have the welfare state, and we actually have these things, these businesses that are set up as charities, which really destroys the whole notion of being charitable. And as nationalists, we need to be charitable to our own. I am firmly convinced that this is the winning strategy, is positive ethnocentrism. Be as good as you can possibly be to your own people. I mean, Patriotic Alternative are doing such a great thing, coming up with all these community building plans, and our opponents have no way to respond to it apart from to call it hate and call us these mean names. And when they do that, they just look so terrible in the press, because everybody can see that what Patriotic Alternative are doing is good, it's positive, it's what they would like to be involved with. And yet they're reading in the paper of what terrible, mean, evil, hateful Nazis these people are, which just exposes our opponents. It's a fantastic winning strategy, and we will be talking more about that in Real Britannia later on tonight, but I think we will finish there for today, and I'll bring you the good news story tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.